Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 20. Pali Maharaj surrenders the universe. And I'm just going to read the translation for text number 5. I do not fear hell, poverty, an ocean of distress, fall down from my position, or even death itself, as much as I fear cheating a brahmana. Text number 6. Yadya dasyati lokesmin samparetam danadikam tasya tyage nimitam kem viprastushen natena chet yat yat whatsoever hasyati will leave loke in the world asmin in this samparetam one who is already dead dana adikam his wealth and riches tasya of such wealth tyage in renunciation Nimitam, the purpose. Kim, what is? Vipra, the Brahmana who is confidentially Lord Vishnu. Tushet, must be pleased. Na, is not. Tena, by such riches. Chet, if there is a possibility. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, you can also see that all the material opulences of this world are certainly separated from their possessions at death, possessor at death. Therefore, if a brahmana, vamanadeva, is not satisfied by whatever gifts one has given, why not please him with the riches one is destined to lose at death? Purport. The word vipra means brahmana and at the same time confidential. Pali Maharaj had confidentially decided to give the gift to Lord Vamanadeva without discussion. But because such a decision would hurt the hearts of the Asuras and his spiritual master, Shukacharya, he spoke equivocally. Pali Maharaj, as a pure devotee, had already decided give all the land to Lord Vishnu. Text 7. Shreya Kurvanti Bhutanam Sarvo Dusha Yad Subi Dyadyan Shibi Pravritaya Kovikalpo Daradishu. Dadichi, Shibi, and many other personalities who are willing to sacrifice even their lives for the benefit of the people in general. This is the evidence of history. So why not give up this insignificant land? What is the serious consideration against it? Purport, Bala Maharaj was prepared to give everything to Lord Vishnu, and Shukacharya, being a professional priest, might have been anxiously waiting, doubting whether there had been any such instance in history, which one had given everything in charity. Pali Maharaj, however, cited the tangible examples of Maharaj Shibi and Maharaj Didachi, who had given up their lives for the benefit of the general public. Certainly one has attachment for everything material, especially one's land, but land and other possessions are falsely taken away the time of death, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Sarvaharas Chaham. The Lord personally appeared to Bali Maharaj to take everything he had, and thus he was so fortunate that he could see the Lord face to face. Non-devotees, however, could not see the Lord face to face. To such persons, the Lord appeared as death and takes away all their possessions by force. Under the circumstances, why should we not part with our possessions and deliver them to Lord Vishnu for his satisfaction. Sri Chanaka Pandit says in this regard, Sannimite varam tyago vinashe niyate siti, Chanakya Sloka 36. Since our money possessions do not last, but will somehow or another be taken away, as long as we are in our possession, as long as they are in our possession, it's better to use them for charity to a noble cause. Therefore, Bali Maharaj defined the order of the so-called spiritual master. Defied the order of his so-called spiritual master. Bali Maharaj, being a devotee, understood what is valuable and what is not valuable, and what the different degrees of value are. For something that only lasts for a moment can't be considered very valuable. And something that lasts forever has to be considered much more valuable than even something very big, which only lasts for a moment. Bali Maharaj, understanding that he's eternal and eternally a servant of Vamanadeva, was willing to give Vamanadeva whatever he wanted, because actually Vamanadeva already had everything. He was the owner. And for one who's in Krishna consciousness, doesn't think that anything happens by accident, that by accident this little Brahmin boy appeared before me by accident, and by accident he's asking for 3 steps to land. Bali Maharaj understood everything is perfectly arranged by Krishna for some purpose. And therefore, as a devotee of Krishna, he's willing to go along with whatever Vamanadeva wanted. Because he never actually thought, a devotee never thinks that he's actually the proprietor of anything. Otherwise, he can't be a devotee, an actually pure devotee. Therefore, Paravas Tavada Bodha Jato Yavana Jignasita Atma Tatvam Yavankriyastavati Dhammanovai Karmatmaka Yena Sharira Bandaha. That as long as one is in this mentality of being the possessor of something in this world, as long as one has the mentality of trying to enjoy whatever one possesses, then one's mind will be covered by these two desires, the desire to control and the desire to enjoy. Therefore, one will have to take birth again and again in order to try to control something and to try and enjoy something else. In other words, as soon as we get a body, then when we get the body, there's a whole set of desires to control and enjoy that goes along with it. All our senses we're trying to enjoy through our eyes, through our tongue, through our hearing, through our nose, through our sense of touch. They're all there to give us opportunities to enjoy, and therefore we're desiring that Krishna arrange the material world in such a way as to gratify our senses. So this is called material existence. And as explained here, the whole basis of that is our attachment to land. Of course, we may think, I'm not attached to land. I don't have any land. No, we've all been taught that you're from this country or that country, and we have to protect this country. Well, what does it mean, protect the country? If you go up in an airplane, can you tell what Slovenia is from Croatia? Is there a big line, drawn? No, it's all, but this is the land that we get our food from. Somehow or another, there's a whole governmental arrangement, and this division has certain rules and regulations by which you're able to get food, just like in this pandemic, whatever it is. Unless you have a particular card, you can't go, I guess they haven't gotten that far, but you can't go to certain stores, there's certain obligations, and they were thinking, well, maybe you should be obligated, even to go buy a candy bar, you'll have to have proof that you've been purified, that you're worthy that you'll purify the candy store instead of contaminating it. So there's a whole set of rules and regulations, and that government determines whether or not you eat or not. That's basically what people are worried about. Because we can say eating is through all the senses. They'll determine what you can see, what you can hear, what you can taste, what you can smell, what you can touch. If they really decide that they don't, you know, you're a menace to their society or their ideas, whatever it is, then they put you in a place where you can't see or hear or touch or smell or taste. Therefore, we consider it our country, because it's not, what part of the country do we really, is it really our country? If we decided the country should join, you know, South America, will anyone take us seriously? I mean, what part of the country do we actually, if it's our country, how is it our country? We're simply servants of some idea that this is our country. And the people who are actually manipulating things think it's their country, actually. They actually are convinced it's their country, and everyone else is just a pawn. Just like in the Krishna book means Srimad Bhagavatam, when Muchukunda, you know the story of Muchukunda? No? Yeah, no, Muchukunda. He fought on behalf of the demigods for a long, long time. He was a great king. Mandata was his father, another famous king. And at that time, kings weren't little tiny, you know, they didn't have little tiny palaces and just have some ceremony in that way it indicates they're king. No, they were actually ruling vast tracts of land, much bigger than this, what we consider this tiny little place called Earth. And they were very powerful. It's not that they got elected as king. And when the time of the battle was, they hid in some bunker somewhere and watched the, you know, communicated 50 yards underneath the ground. No, they were actually in the head of the battle and fighting. Big opponents, big armies they were leading. So the demigods chose Muchukunda to fight on behalf of them. He was so powerful that even the demigods wanted him to fight on their behalf. Now we may think, well, demigods, what is demigods? We think of little fairies with wings or something. I don't know what we think. But these are personalities. I think Sadaputra said that if Lord Shiva, the way he's described the dimensions, that if you put Lord Shiva on this, what we consider this earth planet, that he would cover more than Europe. Not a small little person, you know. If he picked a fight with Lord Shiva, he wouldn't even see you. He couldn't even... wouldn't know where to stomp on you. He'd just blow on you and go halfway across Europe. So these are big, powerful demigods. And Muchukunda joined forces with them to fight with the demigods and defeat the asuras perpetually. This is the eternal battle that goes on in the material world. Doesn't matter what time you come to the material world, this is what goes on, the fight between the demigods and the demons. Unfortunately, at the present time, there's practically only demons, and they just fight against themselves. You've got to fight against someone. So they're just winding up fighting against themselves. And there's a few devotees trying to be nice. So we don't stand in anyone's way of killing each other. So Muchukunda, he fought for many, many years on behalf of the demigods. And then finally, Kartikeya, who is the commander-in-chief of the demigods, asked Muchukunda, you've been fighting for so many for us it would be lifetimes. What can I give you as a benediction? He said, well, I'm a little tired, you know. It's hard fighting 300 million years. I need a little break. So what I want as a benediction is that let me go to sleep for a while, like, you know, a few hundred million years. And anyone who tries to wake me up, let me destroy them. I don't want to be disturbed. Quite a benediction. Obviously, there weren't a lot of technology back then. It wasn't a lot. He had already experienced the material world. There's not much he was really interested in. Because ultimately speaking, whatever benediction people want in the material world is all based upon four things. They want to eat, they want to sleep, they want to mate and defend. They just want to do it in a different way than they're already doing it, so they want benedictions to do it. And maybe benediction so they can do it a little longer than their karma allows them. But anyhow, that's all it's about. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So he chose sleeping. And he was asleep for a long time, and then Krishna arranged it that Muchakunda could be delivered by Kalyavana, who had 33 million Yavana soldiers attacked Dwarka. And Krishna left Dwarka, and this Yavana king, Kalyavana, followed him into the cave of Muchakunda, thought Muchakunda was Krishna, kicked Muchakunda, who woke up, and from his eyes came flames that burned Kalyavana to a little bit of ashes. But in the conversation between Muchakunda and Krishna, Muchakunda said that actually I was a big, big king. I was going all over the world, defeating all the other kings, big, big king. But when I came back to my palaces, I simply went into the inner chambers of my queens and had to fall at their feet for a little sense gratification, although I was a big king. And then he said, what was I actually doing? I was simply encouraging and putting all the citizens, or especially the male citizens, in a position they go out for me and get killed to conquer, to satisfy my whims of conquering other kings, alluring them to fight for their death. And similarly, Nanda Maharaj, when he's speaking to Akura, when Akura came and asked, Nanda Maharaj asked Akura, how are the citizens doing in Mathura under Kangsa? And he said, don't tell me, I already know. So wherever there's a king like Kangsa, such a Rakshasa, he said that actually the only reason why he's there as a king is to devour the citizens. He said the king's protection of the citizens, such a king's protection, is just like the protection that a slaughterhouse keeper has for his animals that he's going to slaughter. It's not very good protection. You wouldn't want to be a cow in a slaughterhouse being protected by the slaughterhouse keeper. So similarly, if one is a demon, asura, what kind of protection can one afford? And if the land is ruled by the demons, by the asuras, and people are thinking, oh, they're so kind, they're giving me something to eat. But actually, their idea is to not for the benefit of the citizens. So land is a big thing, because from land comes the food grains, comes all the other things, the material for our clothing, comes our material for houses and protection and everything else. All comes from the land. It doesn't come out of the sky. Of course, from the sky comes rain, which helps provide the land. But if you just had rain and you had no land, like if you go into the ocean, you can't live very long in just being in the ocean. You need land. And if you don't have any land, you're landless, you're homeless, there's no one who's going to give you any fruits from the land, you're not going to get a wife or a husband. You're not going to have children. You won't have anything. So land is people, oh, my land, you know, where this whole thing is imbued within people. As soon as you're born, you're born into a land, especially in modern society. Everyone is just completely immersed in this idea that I belong to a certain land. But actually it's all an illusion, obviously. And the other illusion is that I can't live without this land. But actually everyone leaves their body, their land. We don't know where we were before and where we're going next. The Druze in Israel, they remember it being Arabs or Israelites in their last lifetime. And they fought against the Israelites and they got killed and they came back as Arabs. And undoubtedly the Arabs are always thinking of the Israelites and they come back as Israelites. And the Israelites are thinking of the Arabs and they come back as Arabs. So this idea of this attachment to this land, whatever, is all just illusion, because the real land that we should become attached to is Krishna's land, Vrindavan. That's where we actually are. We're transcendental to these lands. These are just dreams we're having. Of course, when we have a night dream, we think, well, that wasn't really real. It was a dream. And then when we wake up, we think this dream is real. But it's just another dream. It just lasts a little bit longer than our night dream. Because next we'll have another dreamland we're going to. I mean, after all, what's the difference between this existence and a dream? Dream doesn't last. And all these things that we think are solid, they don't last either. They're ever changing. So what does it mean? How is it any more than a dream? It just lasts a little longer, so we think it's real. But actual reality is Vrindavan. That's our actual home. And we can live there because we're transcendental, even in this lifetime. Even during this lifetime, being in this body, if we transfer our consciousness to Krishna, then we can live in the eternal land of Vrindavan, where we can experience actual happiness and pleasure and at least security. Fearlessness. So Prabhupada was asked, what does it mean to be a pure devotee? Prabhupada means it means to be fearless. Is there any question of any happiness if the foundation is not fearlessness? If we identify ourselves in any way with this material world, then we're going to have to be fearful. Because it's all changing and temporary. It's going to be taken away from us. Just like there's always fighting, there's always wars going on, there's always so many scandals, because the leaders are just giving us the results of our sinful activities. And therefore, it has in Kali Yuga, which is the most sinful age, there has to be some disturbance. And what's the main disturbance? Oh, I might die. That's what everyone's worried about. Couldn't care less. What's, you know, indirectly, you know, they're concerned. But actually the concern, this is reminding me that I might die. There's a possibility, even though I'm a good person, still I might die. My land, everything will be taken away from me at the time of death. Mrityu sarvaras chaham. But one who's a pure devotee, one who's actually absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then he's not afraid of death because he knows he's not going to die. He's living with Krishna now and he'll live with Krishna after he leaves this body. And for one who's aspiring to become a devotee, then by practice, one can know that if I live with Krishna, even for a brief period of time, if I'm conscious of Krishna, then I'm actually relieved of my fear and anxiety and I can feel real love and bliss and happiness. And if I have to come back again and practice more to get more bliss and happiness, what's the problem? That if one is on the path, one becomes less fearful than everyone else because one has more and more growing confidence that I'm going to come back to progress towards my eternal existence, which is unlimitedly pleasurable, happy, and blissful, and loving. That I have a purpose in life. And everyone else's purpose in life to maintain this body and one's family and so-called nation, which is, you know, is all rather frustrating, especially when one has to leave the body. One doesn't know where one is going. Everything is lost at the time of death. And then if you find out that the whole society is based upon illusion and ignorance And untruthfulness, because it's not Krishna conscious, then why should we be so fearful of leaving such a society? Where the whole thing is just, the only reason to be here is to preach Krishna consciousness and to spread it. Otherwise, what is there to be attached to here? You know, to our wonderful bodies, giving us so much pleasure. Every morning we wake up blissful. And we just feel every day, as the bliss grows, as we become more and more aware of our bodies and minds, we're just filling us with wonderful stories about our name, fame, glory, pastimes in this world. Or the government's going to improve and going to, you know, provide us with an ever blissful life of technology. Their dream to implant us with all chips, that we're no longer human beings anymore. We just have superpowers. We have no more feelings. We're just a better, we're a human machine. How wonderful. They have such a glorious future for us. So the conclusion is, if we can take shelter of Krishna, then we can do something meaningful for our own benefit. Even if we don't care about anyone else, at least for our own benefit, we should take shelter of Krishna. Otherwise, what's the alternative? Take shelter of this so-called, you know, human civilization, which is becoming less human every day. Tatas tanudinam dharma satvam socham dhamma shama kalena balira rajan nakshatranu yayor balam smriti. Day after day. It's not that we have to wait a week or 2 weeks or a month or a couple of years to see Kali Yuga progress. No, day after day, what's going on? Tatas tanudinam dharma. Dharma, actually religious principles, are just going down. Few devotees in this world have religious principles. Everyone else is just a dharma, feeding on a dharma. A few people have some conception of God, and therefore they're not in the mood of eating each other so far. They have some morality. They don't think that, you know, they even think pedophilia is bad. Some people in the planet still think it's wrong. Although there's massive propaganda to make it normal, so-called normal. Like everything else has become normal. Killing animals, killing the cow, killing the babies. So it's just a question of helping us go deeper into ignorance, where everything becomes normal. So day after day, dharma goes down. And along with dharma, what happens? Sattvam, truthfulness. Everyone's just... The whole newspaper is just full of... Either they're just giving us their perspective, or they're purposely lying to us. Their perspective is simply materialistic, and the lying is just part of the equation. Satvam, socham, cleanliness. Even the so-called alternative doctors, they say, well, before we want to purify something, we use ethyl alcohol to purify it. Ethyl alcohol, which is the most contaminating substance you could possibly use, alcohol to purify something, they think that it's purifying. So they're supposed to be alternative doctors. They don't even know that alcohol is the most contaminating substance you can utilize. Yes, really. Did you ever drink alcohol? Was it purifying? What's that? No, alcohol is not purifying, either physically or mentally. How can something that's contaminating mentally be purifying physically? Socham satyam dhamma, sentient mind control, shama. Mercifulness. It's going down. It's just disappearing. Whatever was left is disappearing. Balena Kali Ra Ra. By the strong force of Kali Yuga, Nakshatranam Balam Smriti. People are losing their bodily strength. I was reading that, anyhow, we will go into that some other time. People are getting weaker and weaker, you know. They can't even turn on their television. They need a remote. They can't get up. It's too far away. And Smriti, people can't remember anything. The politicians and other, everyone's lying because it's, people can't remember what you said the minute before. So you can lie easily. Because people can't check you're lying, or they don't want to, because they can't remember what it was. And even you play a sequence of people saying something, a politician or someone saying something, how you say they're lying, people say yes, yes, and then 5 minutes later they forget what they saw. So everything's going down, down, down in the age of Kali, and the only remedy is that for us to give people Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there is no human society. Hardly speaking, people are they're losing all the good qualities that make them humans. If you're not merciful, you're not truthful, you're not clean, you have no memory, what kind of human being are you? If you go to a tiger and say, you're not, you know, maybe somebody, you know, in this age where if we're so liberal, everyone is equal. And someone says, well, the tiger's not merciful. That's all right. Who's merciful? It's not clean. Well, it's probably cleaner than you are. It's not truthful. Well, it tells you exactly what it's thinking. I don't think any tiger is lying when he goes, I'm going to eat you. He said, he means it. It's pretty straightforward. So in some ways he has more qualities than human beings have nowadays. They're brahmacharis. They only have sex for propagating children. They don't have, you know, they're not playboys. So in some ways they're more human than human beings are. So that's what we're going into. We're gradually society's diminishing. But here Bali Maharaj is willing to give it all up because he's Krishna conscious. He knows there's nothing I'm going to give up because it's already Dvamada days. He can do whatever he wanted. He arranged this for his pastime. And even if I say no, he's going to take it anyhow. So what's the big deal? I might as well. I'm here just to go along with this plan. That's why Krishna arranged me to take birth as Bali Maharaj, as his devotee. And sure, I'll happy to give it to him because I know Krishna is all merciful and my relationship with Krishna will increase by giving him something that doing his what he wants me to do. So he gave me all this land, supposedly, and now he just wants me to supposedly give it back to him. No problem. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Thank you very much. I'm just because I I made...
Oh, don't worry about that.
No. I just want to know more about that because...
Well, that's the authority. That's one of the things that probably the local authorities have to determine.
Uh-huh.
There's no... I mean, when Prabhupada was here, I don't remember. I mean, I wasn't with Prabhupada all the time, but you don't see ladies putting on garlands to Prabhupada.
That happens to me.
As a sannyasi, generally speaking, ladies didn't personally have contact with Prabhupada. Like that. And if we accept that Prabhupada's still here, you know, in this form as the deity. But then again, you know, if you go on the altar, you know, you put garlands on the deities there. The ladies go on the altar and put garlands on the deities, a Prabhupada there. There's a deity of Prabhupada on the altar. But anyhow, it's something that has to be worked out. It's a subtle point. It's not so obvious.
Yes, I surpass you. You should do that.
So no, it's the local authorities because if I should do it, well, sure. I'm not going to, everyone should do it. Yeah. Everyone's a servant to Prabhupada, so everyone should do it. Anyhow, it's not that the authority, if I'm the GBC here or a sannyasi, whatever, that I'm supposed to do everything. It's called delegation. Theoretically, I'm supposed to do everything, but obviously, I can't do everything. Therefore, we authorize devotees to do things.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Anything else? Go on, go.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. A question about sincerity. Sometimes people, you go in Sankirtan and people say, I will be honest with you, I don't want the book. So is this somehow in any way better than saying, I don't have money, I don't have no time, or it's just the same?
When they see Yamaraj, they can say, well, at least I was honest about going to hell. So they get one less year in hell for their honesty. Anything else? No questions from on internet? Are there any questions on internet? Okay. Kwala, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.